This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Foolish and Vayikra. We're given the outlines of all the major korbanot that have to be brought. In particular, there's a large section of the Sedra dedicated to the korban chatat, to the offering, the korban that has to be brought in the event of a person doing certain types of averos, b'shogeg, by mistake. If a person does an avero on purpose, b'mezid, he can't bring a korban chatat, a sin offering. But if he did the avero by mistake, then he can do tshuva, and part of the tshuva process involves the bringing of a korban chatos. Towards the end of the Sedra, in the fifth perek, the Torah singles out three averos for which there's a peculiar kind of a korban. The three averos are, firstly, shvuas ha'edus. That means if somebody comes to you and says, I'm having a court case with Chaim Shmerl, he says, I owe him 100 rand, I say, I don't. Do you know any evidence that could help me? And if a man does know evidence and says, no, I don't, I'm sorry, I don't know anything about it at all, he has to bring this kind of korban, which we'll talk about in a moment. The second one is tumas hamikdash. If a person became tomeh by touching or coming into contact with something that he shouldn't have come into contact with, various kinds of chochos and dead bodies and so on, and then he goes into the Beis HaMikdash by mistake, not knowing that he was tomeh, he falls into the same category. And the third one is shvuas bitri. That the person makes a shvua, making a shvua means that he says, I will do such and such, or I won't do such and such, whatever it is, he makes an undertaking either to do something or not to do something, and he then does what he said he wouldn't do. He also has to bring this korban. The korban is called a korban oile v'yore, an up and down korban. Why is it called an up and down korban? In essence, it's a korban chatos. It's a sin offering like the other sin offering. But there's something peculiar about this sin offering. It's oile v'yore, which means the Torah says, in fact, that you've got to bring, after it specifies all the isurim, the three dinim, v'hevi et ha'shamo la'Hashem, you've got to bring your korban, a female sheep or goat. And what happens if you can't afford a female sheep or goat? In the other korban chatos, if a man was too poor to afford a sheep or a goat, which is quite an expensive item, particularly at the rate that we do our avodas, if he can't afford it, then the din is he has to wait until he can, he has to save up until he can afford it. But here, strangely enough, it says the imloy sagia yodoy beise, and if it should be that he can't quite afford a sheep, then he can bring two birds. And what happens if he can't afford two birds? Then he can bring flour, the cheapest kind of flour offering. That's why it's a korban oile v'yored. It goes up and down according to the financial status of the person who has to bring the korban. Not only can it be talking about different kinds of people, it can be talking about the same person who might be rich one day and brings a seh, and he does the same avera a few weeks later, and by then he's poor, and for the same avera, the same man will bring a flower offering. So you see that the type of korban is oile v'yored. It goes up and down according to the financial status of the person concerned. There are two things that we want to clarify this evening. The first thing is, what is the common denominator between these three averos? Shvuas edus, denying that you know evidence when you really do. Tumas hamikdash, coming into the Beis Hamikdash, or eating kodshim when you've come into contact with something tzomen, with something impure. And lastly, shvuas habitu, going against an undertaking which you made by way of shvua with an oath. So the first thing is to understand the common denominator between these three things. The second thing is to understand why these three things merit this funny korban oil over yored. Why is the Ribbono Shel Olam so understanding all of a sudden?
All the other Averas, he says, this is the Korban, and you must be able to afford it. For this Avera, the Ribbono Shel says, if you can't afford this, I'll make another one for you. And if you can't quite manage that, I'll make another one for you. Those are the two questions we've got to deal with. It's strange that you see people very often doing crossword puzzles and all sorts of little funny puzzles and these computer games they play with and IQ tests. People have a lot of fun with these things. But each week in the Sedra there is no shortage of such games. And to sit and work out the common denominator between these three others, it should be something that becomes automatically fascinating. Anybody who listened to the Kriyas HaTorah this morning, everybody who followed the Kriyas HaTorah this morning, should have gone home and sat the whole day with a Chumash in front of them trying to figure out what it's all about. It's just fascinating. One has to develop a bit of a fascination with Torah. If one doesn't become fascinated, if one's like a piece of wood when you're hearing the Torah, and you're like a piece of wood when you're learning the Torah, and it makes no difference whether it's difficult or it's not difficult or weird or not weird, one's just not fascinated by it, then the doors won't open, the key isn't there. The first key to understanding is to be fascinated by the absurdity of it. What is the common about these three Averas? The Torah singles out of all the Averas, three: Shvuas Eidus, Tumas HaMikdash, Shvuas Bitu.
Halachically, the difference between these three, leave out the first for a moment, the Shvuas Eidus, because that's slightly different for the next couple of moments. But the second one, that's Tumas HaMikdash and Shvuas Bitu, are different to all the other kinds of Averas for which you have to bring a Korban Chatas in the following way. Now listen to this, it sounds a little bit complicated, but it's not. If you do something by mistake, that means at one point you didn't know that what you were doing was wrong, and at another point you did know that what you were doing was wrong. It means there's been a change in education. That's what doing an Avera, but B'shogeg means when you did the Avera, you didn't know it was an Avera, either because you didn't know that that was the din, or because you didn't know that this fitted into what you learned. For example, either you didn't know that you're not allowed to put on lights on Shabbos, or else you thought that turning on the switch is not putting on lights. You knew the din, but you didn't think this is called putting on a light on Shabbos. Those are the two kinds of shogeg, the two mistakes that one can make. And then afterwards you learn that that in fact was an Avera, that's when you have to bring a Korban Chatas, where you didn't know something, and then you found out afterwards that in fact what you did was wrong. For these two, or three for the sake of let's talk about the last two, you need what the Gemara calls Yediyah, the Helen, the Yediyah. You must once have known, subsequently forgot, and subsequently learnt again. Right, that's the main difference between these Averas and the others. What does that mean? You must have known, we'll see precisely what it means in a moment, but roughly what it means is you must have known that you're not allowed to, or that if you touch something tomei, you're not allowed to go into the Beis HaMikdash, subsequently forgotten it, been taught it again, and then you have to bring the Korban. The difficulty is the following. What are you bringing the Korban for? Or Kapora, for atonement. If you do bring a Korban, that means you need tshuva. You don't need tshuva, you don't need to repent if you did something be'ones. If you did something by force, it was completely beyond your control. You couldn't have been expected to know that that was awesome. For that you don't have to bring a Korban. When do you have to bring a Korban? For shoigeg, when you did something by mistake. Doing something by mistake means that you should have known. And what do you bring the Korban for, really? Not for doing the Avera, because doing the Avera, you didn't know that was an Avera. What you're really bringing the Korban for is that you didn't know it was wrong. A Korban Chatos, a sin offering, tshuva, is not so much for what you did, because you didn't know, or you didn't know any better when you did it. The Korban Chatos, more than anything, is a Korban, a sacrifice, requesting atonement, kapora, for not having known what you should have known. That's what it really is. But if that's the way we understand it, then these three Averas certainly form a different category altogether. Because here you're not bringing a Korban for the fact that I should have known. You did know! What are you bringing a Korban for here? That you forgot. That's the difference. All other Averas, you're bringing a Korban because you didn't know what you should have known. You're bringing a Korban for ignorance. That's the Avera. And that's why it's the same Korban for any Avera. It makes no difference what the Avera is. It's the same Korban Chatos, because the Avera is ignorance. But here, it's not ignorance you're talking about.
Here you're bringing an aveira for forgetting something which you did know. That's a different kind of korban altogether. But that's also difficult to understand, because surely forgetting is an onus. If I didn't know, then I can be obliged to bring a korban because I should have learned. If it was impossible for me to have learned, I'm not obliged to bring a korban. If I came from Russia where it was impossible, there were no svarim, there were no teachers, there was no anything, I don't have to bring a korban. But if I should have learned and could have learned and didn't learn, I have to bring a korban chatos. But what happens if I did learn, but I forgot poshut, I simply forgot, it went out of my mind? Surely that's an onus. Surely that's beyond your control. People can forget things. This really is answered by a Rashi in Shavuos, which I spoke about a little while ago, on Shavuos Daf Hei Amud Aleph 5a, where Rashi describes what kind of yediyah, what kind of knowledge you should have had of the Aveira initially for the Aveira to fall into this category. Says Rashi, Shelomad Beveis Raboy. You learned, he's talking about the middle Aveira as an example, the Ketumas HaMikdash. You learned in the house of your Rebbe, Shehanogea Betuma Toma. You learned the din, the principle you were taught by your Rebbe many years ago, that anybody who touches something which is Tome, something which is impure, becomes impure. Fine. Furthermore, Vehu Yoda Shehirgish Kishenoga. He knew that he'd touched something Tome when he touched it. Right? So two things. He knows the din, and he was conscious of touching the object. Listen to the words carefully. Avaloi Hisboine. But he didn't think it out. His boinen comes from the word bino. It's a form of intellect. He didn't think it out, he didn't intellectualize it. Losum al liboi, to implant it into his heart, to put it on his heart, shenitma, that he has become someone. Let's understand that Rashi carefully, because this Rashi forms the basis of the whole shiur. Says Rashi, he knows the din. He learnt the din. He knows that he touched a chocho. And he knows that when you touch a chocho, he learnt in his Rebbe's home many years ago, you become tome. No problem. So why did he walk into the Beis HaMikdash? What's lacking? He knew that you're not allowed to do it, or that if you do it, you can't go into the Beis HaMikdash. He knew that he touched the thing. What does he walk into the Beis HaMikdash for? What does he eat a korban for? What does he eat kochim for? Says Rashi, Loi his boinen, he didn't consider carefully enough. Losum al liboy, to impress it upon his heart. Shenit ma, that he is Tome. Let's understand it. What happened here is he did something which is not forbidden. There's no issur to touch a chocho. Not forbidden. It just has certain consequences. If you touch a chocho or a dead body, you can't come into the Beis HaMikdash until you've gone through a process of purification of Tahara. In other words, if you do that, then you may not do ABC. But there's no issur in doing the thing. There's no issur in coming into contact with a dead body. On the contrary, one has to, except for a Kohen. But if you did come into contact with a dead body, then you can't go into the Beis HaMikdash unless you've been through the Parah Adumah. That's how it is. The point is here that he did something which he was permitted to do, but which affected his halachic status. He's no longer the same man as he was before. He's now Tome. And that's what he doesn't remember. That's what he didn't consider enough. He didn't consider that he's Tome. A man can forget an event. A man can forget a fact. There's a limit to how much you can remember and how much you can retain. We're being bombarded with facts all the time. More and more and more facts. There's a limit to how much one can absorb and how much one can remember. But to remember who you are, that you can never forget. To remember that I am Tome, that you can't forget if you once learnt it. You can learn the din that if you touch a chocho, you can't go into the Beis HaMikdash and you can forget the din. You can learn that this is a chocho and you mustn't touch it, and you can forget that. And you can forget that you did touch it. But you can't forget that you are Tomei if you realize that you were Tomei. He didn't take it to its logical conclusion. He knew the din, he knew all the intellectual ins and outs, he knew that he'd touched the thing, but he didn't know, I am Tomei, that's who I am. And that's what's happened over here. It's a man who didn't understand that his status was altered as a result of an experience. Because if he would have understood that, he wouldn't have forgotten. And that's what you're bringing the Korban. Let's look at the other two cases. You've got exactly the same. A man comes along and he hears evidence. He's then asked. Let's say before that, the moment you hear evidence, you see A lending B money. At that point, you become an A. You become somebody potentially a witness. So you become different to all other people in that matter. Because nobody else can be called to court to give evidence, whereas you can, you saw it. In other words, knowledge that you have, certain knowledge that you have, has changed you from an ordinary person into a potential witness. Okay? When the man comes along and he says, can you come and give evidence in my case? And you say, no. What is it? A man can forget that he saw the lending of the money. A man can forget exactly how much money it was. But if a man would realize when he's watching it, that I'm not just watching A lending B money. At this moment, I am becoming a witness. I'm graduating. I'm qualifying as a witness. That you don't forget. And the fact that he forgot it means lo yisbone lotsuma libo. He didn't consider it carefully enough to implant it on his heart. Shanaase A, that he became a witness. And likewise, when you take a shvua, you make an oath. You'll become a vegetarian. I mean, we even use words like this. Why don't we just say you're not going to eat meat? We don't. We give you a name. Man is not going to eat meat is a vegetarian. A man is not going to drink wine is a nozi. So you come along and you make a shvua. It's very easy to forget that you made the shvua, that you made the oath. It's easy to forget on what you made the shvua. You made a long, complicated oath. It's easy to forget the details of the oath which you took. But if you see yourself as a changed person, you can't forget that you're a vegetarian. You can't forget that you're a nozir. That's who you are. How can you forget it? Can you forget that you're Jewish? Can a man get married and forget that he got married? It's not shayach. Why not? Why is it not possible to forget that you're married? Because you've changed. That's your essence. That's who you are. You can't forget your name. You can't forget who you are. And a man is a whole lot of things. He's a man or a woman who is married or unmarried or divorced or widowed. He's Jewish or non-Jewish. He's a Kohen, a Yisrael, or a Levi. He's under Shvua, he's a Nozir, or he's not a Nozir. He's a vegetarian, or he's not a vegetarian. He's a witness in a certain state, or he's not. He's a doctor, or he's a lawyer, or he's a rabbi. There are various things to make up who he is. There are a whole lot of things that go into describing the essence of the man, who he really is. We talked last night about the fact that some people have more than one name in the Torah, because there are different aspects to who they are. But you can't forget who you are. Says Rashi, the essence of forgetting is that you don't realize that you are changed, that you are different. There are three directions in which one can change. One can change up. One can change down. And one can change sideways. One can change up, that's the first point. Shvuas ha'edus. How do you change up? There's only one way. Increased knowledge. How do you become an aid? How do you become a witness? By the fact that you know something that you didn't know before. That's it. By the fact that you know something which other people don't know. If everybody knew it, they wouldn't need witnesses. If nobody knew it, there wouldn't be witnesses. The peculiarity of this situation is that you are one of the very few people who know, and that makes you a witness. It makes you unique, and it gives you a qualification. You're an aid, you're a witness in this matter. And when you're an aid, when you see yourself as an aid, it gives a certain responsibility to you. And you never really forget. What causes forgetfulness? The fact that for a few moments, or a few days, or a few months, your mind is off. You don't forget something that you're constantly with, something that you're busy with all the time. Milsa de lo ramya, milsa de lo... what have I forgotten? Milsa de lo nashvita, milsa de lo... De lavadaita. A thing which a man is not occupied with isn't on his mind. Something which he's occupied with is on his mind. Once he's not occupied with it, it's not on his mind. Once you break off from something, that's where the danger of forgetfulness sets in. Why don't you remember? Why don't you forget who you are? Because you never break off with it. Whatever you're doing, it's me who's doing it. Whatever I'm hearing, it's me who's hearing. Who am I? I am so-and-so, a doctor, who's Jewish, and a Kohen, etc., etc. All these things are always being exercised and always being lived. That's the person who's living. So you're always occupied with yourself. You never forget yourself. If you add to your qualification 8, I'm a witness, you won't forget the evidence either. You won't forget the fact that you're a witness either. That's how you move up, by added knowledge. You move down by tumah, by coming into contact with something impure. It's interesting that you just have to touch something which is tumah and you become tumah. There's nothing you can touch and become holy. It doesn't work the other way around. You want to become holy, it's through knowledge. You want to raise yourself upwards, there's only one way. You've got to know something which you didn't know before, then you're raising yourself upwards. There's nothing you can touch, there's no magic. Just be in the company of someone or in some sort of special atmosphere and everything changes. It doesn't work like that at all. With tumah it works. If you're in a bad environment, if you're in contact with somebody in whose contact you shouldn't be, you can fall to the bottom. And to climb up again, you've got to start with knowledge. And you can move sideways like you become a vegetarian. That means you're changing your metzius. You're no longer the same person as you were before. Before you weren't a vegetarian, now you are a vegetarian. It's not a move up, it's not a move down. So it's a sideways move. Those are the three kinds, and that's the last kind. That's the shvuah. When you take an oath, when you take a shvuah to do something or not to do something, and that shvuah can only apply to things which you're not obligated or forbidden to do in any case. Okay? That means in addition to what the Torah has allowed you to do and prohibited you from doing, you're adding some extra laws of your own, personally.
Just let's understand this clearly before we go into the second part, which is to understand why the Korban Oyle V'Yored of all things applies. Let's understand clearly what we're saying here.
A man will never forget that he's a doctor. A man is a doctor, he won't forget. Not only won't he forget that he's a doctor, he won't forget what made him a doctor. Those moments in the exam, his final, receiving the results, graduating, those moments he'll never forget in all his life. What will he forget? Everything he learned at university. A man will never forget that he's a rabbi. And he'll never forget the moments during the smicha test when he was sitting in front of the Rav and the Rav was questioning and pressurizing and pressurizing and pressuring from here to there and the sweat was pouring down his face. He'll never forget it. And he'll never forget it when the Rav takes out his paper and starts writing out the smicha and gets his little rubber stamp and stamps the paper. He'll never forget it. But to remember what he learned to make him a Rav, that's easy to forget. What's the problem? How can that be? It's a completely distorted attitude of what's important. What it is a man thinks, why? What made me a doctor? What changed me from a layman into a doctor? The moment I graduated, obviously, because before that I wasn't a doctor, and after that I was a doctor. The moment I got my smicha, I became a rov. So what's important? The man writing out a piece of paper is important, and that I'll never forget, because that changed me. It's not true that changed you. If that's what changed you, you're not a rov. And if that's what changed you, you're not a doctor or a lawyer or a chemist or anything else. What's changed you is the years and years of learning, of absorbing, of integrating, of analyzing, of swatting, of questioning, of going into the thing, of making medicine or rabbonus or law, whatever it is, making it yours, making it part of you, that it's indistinguishable from you. That's what makes you a professional. And if we saw it that way, we would never forget our law, and we would never forget our medicine, and we would certainly never forget our Torah. We're geared to believing that learning is merely preparation for some major event, and that event will change us. That event will bring our salvation. And it's not just learning, it's our whole lives are like that. A kid goes through school thinking, when I've got my matric, that's when I'll start living. Then I can do what I want. Gets his matric, and he feels different. What's different? Not the years at school. The years at school were only there because you need that to get a piece of paper. But the important thing is getting the piece of paper. Now he's got the piece of paper. Well, now I've got to pick a degree. I've got to go to university. Once I've got my degree, things will be different. And off he goes. He slugs. What's he at university for? to get a degree, not to master a subject, not to enjoy the study, not to learn and know what it's all about, not to become proficient at what he's doing. He's there to get a degree. So finally they hand him the degree. If they would hand him the degree in one day, he would be happy and take it. But they insist that you sit there for 3 years. So he sits for 3 years out, does what they expect him to do, they give him the piece of paper and off he goes. Now once I get married, things are going to be different. Now I'm getting ready, I've got to prepare myself for marriage. Go and work, find a job, make some money. Not because I'm going mad for money, but I want to get married and support a family. It sounds very noble. And he works and he goes, working towards that magical day, one day when he's going to get married. Then he stands under the chuppah. And he comes out of the chuppah, he's a changed person. He's married, before he was a single person, now he's a married person. And he'll never forget those moments under the chuppah. Okay, fine. Now what's he talking about? Now he's got to work. When he retires, things will be different. You know, you've got to work hard, and it's difficult, there's no time to learn, there's no time to work. Just wait, we'll make enough money, I'm going to retire early. Don't think I'm going to retire at 65, everybody says that. We're going to retire early, we're going to make a lot of money, and so we won't live quite the way we would like to, we'll save, don't worry. Retirement's going to come, that's when we start living. And retirement comes, and he'll never forget his retirement day, and then what happens? Then Toshet and Nebuch, he waits to die. That's the next major event on his calendar. He's lived from one event to another event. And so a life goes. Means to an end. Everything is a means to an end. And when things are a means to an end only, there's no living. There's plain and simply no living. You're just not living. You're not getting to grips with anything. It means on the basis of this Rashi, whatever you're achieving can be lost in a moment. The only thing that can't be lost is you. And the only thing that is of value is something which is changing you. But if you're doing something merely as a means, and the thing is not changing you, it doesn't become part of you. And if it doesn't become part of you, then the chances are it's going to be lost in any case. And what are you wasting time for? And one finds, plain and simply, that one goes through a whole lifetime without having achieved anything. A young man goes to yeshiva and he works. What's he working for? Okay, this Gemara I'm confused over. Just wait till next Gemara. I've got to learn this one to get to the next one. We start a new leaf when we get to the next Gemara. Start the next Gemara. Okay, what's he doing? He's got to get to the end of the parak. Once I've got to the end of the chapter, I'll revise it all, then I'll know it clearly. Each time there's a goal ahead. Now there has to be a goal ahead, because if there's no goal ahead, we become slack. But one has to understand that the goal is merely a pressure point. The goal that you put ahead is not the real thing. It's like you want your donkey to move, so you pointing. You're walking with a child on Shabbos, and you want your child to walk, and the child doesn't want to walk, so you tell the child, at home I'll give you a chocolate. The child starts walking. Is the chocolate the main thing? Is that why you're going home? In the child's mind, it is the main thing. I'm going home to get the chocolate. But would an adult think like that? That we're going home so that I can give the child the chocolate? The chocolate is only a means of putting pressure on the child to get home, but what we need to do is be home. Not only do we need to be home, we need to walk. At the moment, we need to be walking. Forget about being home. If we're walking, we'll get home. So all that you need to be doing now is walking. The promise of the chocolate is a way to get walking. That's all. As long as you know where you're going, you've just got to see that you keep moving. And you can use all sorts of artificial pressures to make yourself move. But what we've done is we've confused the pressures with the real thing. You've got to write an exam at the end of the year. Why do you have to write an exam at the end of the year? For them to see whether you know your subject. They can't tell in one exam whether you know your subject or not. It's not possible. What the exam is there for is to pressurize you, because you don't know what they're going to ask in the exam. So hopefully you learn as much as possible so as to do as well as possible in the exam. And they punish you if you don't do well. If you don't do well, you've got to do the year over again. So they create a pressure point. But to start figuring that what I'm working for is for the exam, what are you going to remember after that? You'll remember sitting in the exam room. I remember every exam I've ever written. Believe me, I don't remember what I wrote, and I don't remember what led me to those exams. I don't even remember why I was there in the first place. But the atmosphere sitting in the exam room, yes, because that's what was important. And that's not how it should be. What's important is how I'm changing as a result of it. If I'm changing as a result of what I'm doing, that's what's important. And again, there are three ways of changing. There's the third way, which is the easy way, a change sideways. You decide simply to change a job. To make change, to move house, to emigrate, to immigrate, whatever it is, it's from one thing to another, to move sideways. It's one kind of a change. But the change again has to be something which is for you, something which is changing you, not where you are changing something. The other is tumor. You've come into contact with an experience which has lowered your level. That's it. You're not where you should be. Why? Because you brushed sides with something that you should never have been exposed to. One has to feel that that has happened. One has to feel the change. And then there's the mover, yedia. To know something that you didn't know yesterday. And to feel that as a result of that, I am not the same man that I was yesterday. That's what's important. We started talking about it last night and this morning. It's imperative to be able to question yourself at the end of a piece of, after having experienced anything, one has to be able to stop afterwards and say to oneself, in what way am I different? And if the answer is, I don't know, then you've wasted your time. Plain and simply wasted your time. You haven't lived that time, that's all. One has to be able to say that I'm different, I'm not the same person that I was before. The same as by knowing evidence I become an A, by knowing my medicine I become a doctor, by knowing your Adaya I become a Ro, so by knowing anything I become something. Maybe the differences aren't halachically as dramatic as the examples we've just given, but they don't have to be halachically dramatic, they can be dramatic nevertheless. I'm different to what I was. What's the method of achieving it? Hisboinen, says Rashi. Rashi uses a lot of words here. It's unlike him. One has to understand exactly what he's saying. He knows the din. And he knows what he did. So this is a man who is fully conscious. He knows the whole Torah. He knows Halacha, the whole of Shas. And he's conscious about what he's doing. We're not talking about an automator just goes around doing things and doesn't notice what we're doing. What he's doing. We're talking about a man. He learnt the principle, he learnt the din by his Rebbe. And he knows that he felt the tome thing when he touched it. Three elements. Starting at the back, you must know shenitma, I am different now. Because if you don't know that, you'll forget the rest of it. That's the only thing that's important. How have I been affected by what's just happened? That's what you must know. How do you know it? Going back one step. Losum aliboy. It's got to be impregnated into your heart. It's got to be something that you feel with all its depth. It's got to be something you feel inside. Just to know something. Rebellia, my great uncle, used to say, you can read Kohelet. And it says, Hevel Havolim, Omar Kohelet, Hevel Havolim, Akol Hevel. Everything is nothing and everything is worthless and everything, ever love all him, nothing of nothingness is, everything is nothing. Okay, you've learnt it. You can learn it again. That means he's talking about the material world without Torah. If you extract spirituality from things material and things physical, then what you're left with is Hevel HaVolim, you're left with absolutely nothing. Now do we know it or don't we know it? Every school child knows that. He knows the Pasuk. He knows where to find it. He knows what Rashi says on it. He knows what the Mitzudot say on it. He knows what the other important Mefarshim say on it. And he knows that it's true. And what does he do when he's finished learning the Pasuk? He goes and involves himself in the Hevel HaVolim. He goes and to the cinema, and after the cinema he goes for a drink, and then he goes to bed without saying Kriya Shma. So how do you know? Is that called knowing? That's not called knowing. It's not losum aliboy. You have not been affected by that knowledge, and if you've not been affected by the knowledge, you don't know. And it's something you're going to forget sooner or later. Because the only things you don't forget are you. That's the only thing at the end that's left. At the end, after 120 years, when we all depart from this world, what's left? Me, that's all, my neshama. So only that which has made an impression on my neshama comes with me. Anything which doesn't make an impression on my neshama doesn't come with me. And we laugh at material people and we say, what does he think? All the jewels he's collecting, all the diamonds he's collecting, all the motor cars he's collecting, all the buildings around town he's collecting. Is he going to take it with him after 120 years? And we laugh at him. Oh, ridiculous. What does he think? And we? All the Gemara we're learning, all the Chumash we're learning, all the Shirim where we're going to, are we going to take it with us afterwards? If it's changed us, yes. But if it hasn't changed us, no. That's it. The din is one will take with what one remembers. And one sees here that one remembers that which has affected you, something which hasn't changed you. One doesn't take with one at all. That's material collection. So you've got a Masechta in your pocket. So you've learned 55 daf, or you've learned 500 daf. If you don't know it, if it hasn't affected you, if it hasn't changed you, that's not yours. That's something you've heard, it's you've collected along the way. Salasum al-libu. It's important to be affected by that which one has learned. How do you do it? Says Rashi. This is an incredibly important Rashi. One step back. Loi hisboinu. Plain and simple hisboinu. To sit and figure it out. Just to work it out. What do you have to work out? The connection between what you've learned and you. That's all. He knows the din that if one touches a sheret, one becomes tome. Right. He knows that. That's in a box at the back of his mind. He knows that I touch the sheret. That's in another box at the back of my mind. But to know the connection between my knowledge and me, that three things now connect up. That if one touches a sheret, one becomes tome. Plus, I touch the sheret equals I am tome. And he doesn't do the equation. He doesn't add everything up to see in what way it's affected me. Then he's got nothing. Same, a man who hears edus, a man who hears evidence, or a man who sees a fact. He saw A lend B 100 rand. He knows that if you see A lend B 100 rand, you can be called to the Beis Din to give edus. But he doesn't feel himself having changed into an aid. He doesn't feel himself having changed into a new person, into a witness. He hasn't changed. The chances are that he'll forget even the evidence which he knows. And that's the incredibly important part here. The internalization through his boneness. There's no magical emotional experience that can do the trick for you. There's no inspiration. Yes, one can be inspired, but it doesn't mean a thing. You heard Rabbi Zrachi a little bit earlier with Paro, with the people that he was talking about who were in tremendous trouble. Each one in his own way and is saved miraculously. All those are momentous, tremendous experiences that lifted people to the most incredible highs. And he gave the example of the Six-Day War. Everybody was religious after the Six-Day War. Everybody in Israel and anybody who was following the events became religious. With Chozer B'Tshuva, everybody. There was no such thing as those, during those last moments of the war, there was nobody agnostic who knew anything about the war. But then it disappeared. Why? You can't rely on a dramatic event to change you. A dramatic event can change you momentarily, but to change you permanently, only his boneness. You have to sit down and figure out what happened. Figure out what happened to me, not what happened to the soldiers in the war, not looking always objectively, what has that done to me? Has the war changed me? And when the equation is completed, when you've done your 1 plus 1 equals 2, and you realize who you are, and you've qualified, and you start acting according to your qualification. Why does a doctor not forget that he's a doctor? Because he behaves like a doctor. A rabbi doesn't forget that he's a rabbi because he behaves like a rabbi. A person who's tomei doesn't forget that he's tomei because he behaves in accordance with the way of a man who's tomei. If you've been affected by something and you behave in accordance with the way that a man who's been so affected behaves, you'll never forget that which you were affected by. It's not possible. Because that is you. You've united with it. The problem is that we're constantly involved in observing, just in listening. It's not being changed. It's not being affected. The reason? Many reasons. And we're going to spend a lot of time over the next few weeks in Midrashim going into this phenomenon. Because really, this is something I've spoken about regularly for many years now. And it's something that, for sure, you don't hear. And I don't hear. One speaks about it and one knows it, but it's not losum alibur. The fact is we're doing it all the time. Learning and rushing from one shir to another shir, and from a shir to a chavrusa, and a chavrusa back to a shir, and from the shir to home, and home one comes out and one goes to sleep, gets up in the morning to davening, another shir, off to work, back from work, rushing around, running where? Running in circles. Just running in circles, one's not getting anywhere. So you're collecting. What difference does it make if you're collecting money or you're collecting shiurim? It's not affecting us. It's not changing us. Why is it not changing us? Because we don't have fun. That's why. We don't open ourselves to what we're learning. Opening yourself to what you're learning means allow yourself to be exposed. When you finish, just have a bit of fun. We're learning a parsha of Chumash. Figure out what's the connection between these three things. And don't figure it out as a difficult intellectual exercise. When you're finished figuring it out, ask yourself, "Nu, and so what? Why did the Ribbono Shel Olam, who's obviously got better things to do with his time, find it necessary to come down here and teach me this? Why did God have to tell me these three things? That if you're in a case of Shavuos Ha'edus, or in a case of Tumas HaMikdash, or in a case of Shavuos Bitui, the din is a korban oil of a yored. Why do I have to know that? What difference does it make to me? How have I been affected by it?" And if you can't answer that question, you haven't learnt it yet deeply enough. And you've got to go back to it to learn it some more, until you know and until you're able to say, "That's how I've been affected by it." That's the hardest part of learning, but it doesn't take much more time. The tragedy with what we're doing is that we're putting in so much time and so much effort into Yiddishkeit, and that last little bit we're not doing. You know, it's like a man who runs a race and runs and he's about to win, and he thinks, "I can't carry on." So he pulls out, not knowing that he has another 6 inches to go, and he would win. That's a little bit like what we're doing. We're learning, we're running, we're working, we're slaving. And we're not getting the credit for it. We're not getting the rewards. We're not getting the fruits and the fulfillment. Because the last 5 minutes we don't put in. We close our Gemara when we understand it. Without saying just 1 second before I close my Gemara, "Nu, in what way has this affected me?" And the ladies always ask why they can't learn and so on. This kind of learning is learning which applies to men and to women, to old people, to young people. Because this is the kind of learning one does 24 hours a day. And that's why one never forgets one's learning, or one should never forget one's learning, because one's constantly learning. Out of everything one does or sees, let's say one has to chas v'sholom be a street cleaner for a parnasa. So you might say, "What are you supposed to do? How are you supposed to relate to it?" I don't know, but you're supposed to learn every moment that you're cleaning the streets. Learn by the people you're watching. Observe them. Notice them. Take something from them. By the flowers and the trees you walk past. By the rubbish you find in people's cans. I don't know what you learn from, but there's got to be every moment something which is changing you, something which is causing you growth. Because believe me, the Ribbono Shel Olam would not waste one moment of your lives or our lives exposing you to something from which you can't grow. It's not shaykh. The Ribbono Shel Olam puts us here for a limited period of time. It's not possible that he'll expose us to any experience from which we can learn nothing. So we've got to know a priori that any situation in which we find ourselves is potentially a source of Torah. We can learn from it, we can grow from it. All it needs is one question. Nu, what am I getting out of this? In what way is this moving me? In what way is this changing me? That's something one does all the time. A woman in her home or at her work, a man at his work or in front of his Gemara, reading the newspaper, reading a book. And if the answer is, "I'm getting nothing out of it," just close the book, or stop doing what you're doing, and do something else. There's no point in doing something from which you're getting that. Sometimes one will find that one closes the book, and one opens another book, and one's still getting nothing. And one closes that book, and one goes for a walk, and one's still getting nothing. Then you suddenly click. It's not because the book's got nothing, and it's not because the first book had nothing, and it's not because the walk has nothing, it's because I have nothing. And then one realizes that the work is not just in opening and closing the books, but in being able to say at the end of it, "What have I got?" I'll tell you one other thing. One gets terribly frustrated in learning. And again, by learning, I'm not talking only about formal learning of Torah. I'm talking about growing. When one thinks of what has to be achieved, of what needs to be known, one gets terribly frustrated. Say you know another daf of Gemara Ksubis. And where is that in the 2,500 daf of Shas? So you know another din in the Chaya Adam. Where is that in the whole of Shulchan Aruch? Another one little din. What's it all for? Where is it really taking you? So in the end of the year, you'll know 20 daf. And where's that taking you? The frustration, the cause of frustration is that you don't even know that one thing that you're talking about. Because when one's growing, you don't feel frustrated, because it doesn't matter if you're growing here or you're growing here. The emotion of growing is what's important. And if you're growing down here, that's fine, because you're growing. You're using your time to its maximum ability. And if you're growing up there, that's also fine. You don't think of the gap between here and there. You think of the fact that what a wonderful experience this feeling of growth, this feeling of going up, this feeling of becoming different, of qualifying every day. That thrill of qualifying as a doctor after 6 years of study is a thrill that a human being should have every evening before he goes to bed. He should qualify as a new human being. He should have achieved things today and learned things today which makes him different to what he was before, and he goes into the world the next morning a new, different human being. Qualified, changed status, everything. If he simply learns. And when you're operating like that, you don't get frustrated. So you don't think to yourself, I've learned one daf of Gemara, but I've still got 3,000 to go. Because it's not that you've learned one daf of Gemara. You don't look at it that way. You say to yourself, look how I've changed in one day. Look at me. I'm a different man to what I was yesterday. You don't look at what still has to be done in terms of pages. That's not important, pages. A man makes R1 million on the stock exchange because he says to himself, what's that? R1 million, look how many millions there still are to make. And the next day he makes R10 million. Does he come home crying? R10 million, and what's that? And even if you make R10 million a day, you know how much money Harry Oppenheimer's got? A man doesn't do that. The thrill of making money is so great that he comes home elated. The thrill of growth is so great that you come home elated no matter how much there is still to grow. That becomes irrelevant. That becomes unimportant. Lastly, why the Korban Oyleh V'Yoreg? Why does the Ribbono Shel Olam show this tremendous tolerance, as most of the Mefoshim take it, for people who can't afford to bring the Korban? The Ribbono Shel Olam, I think, wants to teach us a lesson and drive the lesson home very clearly. What does he say? In the normal case of an Aveiro, where you do something wrong, this is the Korban. You jolly well strive to get it, save up your pennies until you can afford it, and until you can afford it, you don't have kapora. You're not atoned for until you've brought the sacrifices, until you can afford it. Here the Ribbono Shel Olam is trying to teach us something else. He's trying to drive home that there are different statuses in mankind. Man, everything, if you want to understand the spiritual concept, it's always a good idea to translate it into material concepts, because we can understand material concepts more easily. In fact, a korban, a sacrifice, is such an example. A korban is mesiras nefesh. It's taking life and giving it to the Ribbono Shel Olam. You're materializing a concept. Here the Ribbono Shel Olam materializes the concept of changing status as a result of growth. When you move from a little bachelor flat into a three-room flat, it's not just that you have a new flat. You're a different person. And when you get out of the flat and you can buy a home, it's not that you've just changed addresses. You're a different person. It affects you. It affects your lifestyle. It affects your view of yourself. It affects your image. It affects the way you operate with other people. And when you sell your Volkswagen and you buy a Rolls Royce, it's not just that now you've got one kind of car, now you've got another car. You're a different person when you're driving around in a Rolls Royce. It's important. Ribbono Shel Olam wants to say the korban for this Aveira is a sheep or a goat. You can't afford it. Ha ha, you realize that there's such a thing as can't affording. You realize that there are different levels. Okay, bring a bird. You can't afford birds, bring flour. But you've got to know that you can't bring a sheep. Why can't you bring a sheep? Because you can't afford it, you little so-and-so. That's what it is. You can't afford it, and he can afford it. There's a difference. And when you've made more money, you've changed your status. Because when you've made more money, you can afford a better sacrifice. When you've made a bit more money, you can bring birds. And when you make still more money, you can bring a kesev, you can bring the sheep, or you can bring the goats. That means the money that you've got changes your status, doesn't it? Remember that it's the same with ruchnius, it's the same with spiritual things. Don't think it's only through money that there are classes, that there's a poor class, a middle class, an upper class, and they're different. They operate differently, they work differently, they have a different system of economics and a different system of psychology. And a man who's in a middle class can't do what a man in an upper class can do. And a man who's poor can't do what a man in a middle class can do. So you must know that a man who knows one mesechta can't do what a man who knows two mesechtas can do. And that a man who knows 10 mesechtas can't do what a man who knows the whole of Shas can do. A man who's not a doctor can't do what a doctor can do. Not because the one has a slip of paper and the other one hasn't, but because they're different human beings, they're different classes. It's to understand the connection between accumulating and changing. where the Ribbono Shel points out that even in your miserable material world, accumulating is not just for the sake of accumulating, but it's for the sake of changing status. How much more so in the world of Torah, in the world of Ruchnis, that we don't accumulate just for the sake of accumulating, but only for the change of status. Imagine if one saved up for years and years to buy a Rolls Royce and a house in Santa, and you decided you were going to do it in one go, even if it takes you 10 years longer. You want to make sure that you get into upper class, and you save and you save and you save, and finally the day comes and you buy your house in Santon and you buy your Rolls Royce, and you open the newspaper and there's a notice from the government, the new budget has just come out, every man in South Africa will be given a Rolls Royce and a house in Santon. Finished. What's the point? The pleasure of your house in Santon and the Rolls Royce is gone. Because what did you do that for? You wanted to raise yourself into a different status, and what's happened is you haven't been able to, because now you're still in the same old middle class status. So in Gashmias, in material things, the basic motivation is to bring about a change, to raise your level. How much more so in Yiddishkeit, how much more so in Ruchnis, the whole function of learning and experiencing things and doing things is to change one's level and is to change one's status. And with that understanding, the levels to which one can climb are just uncountable. There's just no limit to where one can go. But not to accumulate. There's a limit as to how much you can accumulate. How much you can accumulate is a factor of time. Depends the speed at which you learn. If it takes you 2 hours to learn a page of Gemara, or it takes you 2 days to learn a chapter of your history or of your English literature or whatever it is that you're studying, then you can only learn in a year 365 times the amount that you can do in your 1 day. That's the absolute maximum. But when you're talking about qualifying, when you're talking about changing yourself, there's no limit at all, because that's a qualitative thing. In one moment you can change your being completely. You can go from one level to another level, and in another moment again you can go up to another level, as long as there's one condition, and that is that you are being changed by what you're being exposed to. And the thrill of qualifying after qualifying, of moving after moving, of changing one's status, firstly, is a thrill which avoids any kind of depression or despair. And more important, once it's changed you, it will never be forgotten. A piece of information, a piece of learning, or a human experience which has affected you is something that is with you forever. It's something that you'll retain, it's something you'll relate to, and never fall into the category of these three gentlemen that to bring a korban oil over your head.